This is Greg Olson, here to tell you about my new podcast, TE1. On the show, I had a chance to talk to my fellow tight ends who have revolutionized the position from an extra lineman to a dual threat superstar. And just like my guests have changed the game, this year, NFLSundayTicket.tv is revolutionizing your NFL viewing experience. Stream all the live out-of-market NFL games every Sunday on your favorite devices and never miss a moment from your favorite players. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use the promo code GREG88 at checkout and get 15% off your subscription. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv and the promo code GREG88. Subscribe to TE1 and get NFLSundayTicket.tv, an unmatched dual threat.
Blue Wire. Welcome back. This is the Big Blue Banter New York Giants football podcast. I'm Dan Schneier, joined by my co-host, Nick Filato. Today's show is going to be a little different than the last one. Obviously, on the last one, things got a little heated. Had myself a nice little rant. There might be a time and a place for a coming State of the Giants, State of Dave Gettleman, look back on his entire tenure. I'm not ruling any of that out, but we're not there yet. Both Nick and I came away as, believe it or not, a little more optimistic. And again, how much is this saying considering how negative and pessimistic I was on Sunday night? But a little more optimistic about what we saw on the film. It always is important to go back to the game film. It's what we do. We grind it. We watch it. We chart it. We write notes. We compare notes. We prepare for this show. So without further ado, before we get into that, Nick, how are you feeling a few days removed from that epic disaster that was the Giants 49ers?
I still think it's a disaster, but I guess I can just take away a couple positives in terms of play calling from Jason Garrett. I thought that execution was a big issue, specifically by someone like Andrew Thomas. There was a few throws that Jones left on the field as well that I think could have been maybe put the Giants into a better position. And obviously there was the fumble by Ingram. There was a couple plays that might have led to the Giants scoring more points, but in reality, they didn't really have a chance in the game, even if those were executed 100%.
Yeah, for me, if you're asking why I'm feeling a little more optimistic, it's all offensive side of the ball. So yes, we'll get into both sides. I'm not feeling any more optimistic about the defense. I think this defense is potentially 2 years away from competing or a massive, you know, Jerry Reese-like free agent spending spree next year, which I'm now not totally against because I can't stand watching these guys on defense. There's just so many spots where they need to upgrade. But why I'm optimistic watching this is that, yeah, you mentioned the throw Daniel missed to Ingram, sure, but there were also throws in this game that could have been made if not for some protection breakdowns. One key pressure, Cam Fleming, that comes to mind, where Jones had, you know, a turkey hole shot to Slayton that could have changed the game. It would have at worst been a 20-yarder, and it had a chance if he taps along the sideline. We'll get into these plays specifically to go longer. And then finally, later in the game, you talked about this, the deep comeback to Slayton. This one could have been a big one, but the pressure that Andrew Thomas gives up right away kills the play. If you're asking me optimistic, I am more optimistic because I watch Jones and I watch Garrett, and I like what I've seen from them more than what I expected, Nick, on Sunday night. And again, we're not saying they're world beaters. We're not saying things are all gravy and good in Giants Nation. But what we're saying is the initial reaction on both those fronts is a little more positive. Now, on the flip side, Andrew Thomas, I am starting to get worried there. It's still third game for a rookie, but when you see guys like Tristan Wirfs and Mekhi Becton and Jedrick Wills performing the way they're performing in their first three games, and I know they haven't matched up against the same guys, but then again, Andrew Thomas's game against the 49ers wasn't really what it was supposed to be without Boston Fordin. I am starting to get a little worried because this was a guy who I didn't love anyway coming out of the draft. I would have never taken him at four. If you told me there was any tackle to take at four, and I made this clear, by the way, in the pre-draft podcast, we discussed this, Nick. The only tackle I was willing to take at four was Becton. He was the only one I saw with Hall of Fame potential upside, all-pro, super all-pro upside. And otherwise, I'm not taking a tackle at four when there's four in a class. I'm trading back. I'm going to 10. I'm going to 8, 9, 10, 11 range. And I'm taking whichever of the four falls. That's how I'm doing it, unless I'm going with the total upside swing of Becton. But, you know, we'll talk more about that. And I want to hear your thoughts watching Thomas in this one. And really, that whole left side of the line to me looks a little further behind than the right side right now, for both in the run game and in the pass game. So before we go there, Nick, I want to know your overall thoughts on... Let's start with this. What, in your opinion, why did the Giants lose this game?
Giants lost this game because the 49ers are a much better coached team in terms of timing, rhythm, and execution. it was apparent on the misdirection, jet sweeps, the plays that the 49ers used on offense to manipulate the Giants' defense. It was so apparent that the details are coached so heavily with that team, because Kyle Shanahan will roll an offense out there led by Nick Mullins, and that offense will be used on several different plays, the similar looks, similar pre-snap motions, but the end result will always be different. And it left Giant defenders with their feet in the mud several times, where they would have to hesitate, and that slight hesitation is just enough in the NFL to let the offense totally exploit you. And that's what happened in this game. You saw it all throughout the first half. It's one of the big reasons why there were so many long drives by the 49ers. Into the second half, it was the same thing. They would show a pre-snap motion, and then they would give just regular run, and then they would do some kind of counter off that run. Then they would do a G lead, which is a front side guard. Then they would do backside pullers for uncovered whenever the Giants left offensive linemen uncovered. And then they would also bring jet sweeps from the backside receiver around and do nothing with them. And then 3 plays later, guess what they do? They hand that ball off to that jet sweep. And the Giants are caught looking. Where's the football? I don't know where the football is. And it was literally just the execution of the offense for the 49ers was so crisp. And it was so obvious the Giants did not know where the ball was until it was way too late.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. And because, I mean, I said it on the first pod on Sunday night, the 49ers didn't punt a single time that game. And I stand by what I said. If you watch this game, and you don't even need to rewatch on the All-22. If you want to go back right now, click on a box score, go drive by drive. The offense did not lose this game. The offense didn't come close to losing this game. The offense moved the ball a lot in this game. The only times they really got bogged down were by pressures given up by Thomas, one by Fleming that hurt a drive. And for the most part, they moved the ball in this game consistently against the 49ers. I know it's not the A-squad 49ers defense. I know there were injuries, but when you have a defense that doesn't force one punt in a single game, you're not going to win that game ever. And as I look back on this game, my blame goes to the defensive side of the ball. I had plenty of issues there that I wanted to discuss. There were times where I thought there were two Giants players running into the same zone, leaving an open vacancy, where missed tackles killed them. The chiral facro play just absolutely destroyed them. And these were two plays that killed them on second and longs. They got their team more than a few times. They put the 49ers in second and long situations by having really good run stops and being really disciplined in their run fits on first down. And yet, as the 49ers hit him with, like you said, the pre-snap motion, the play-action game, the crossers, it seemed like these guys were just in the wrong spots at the wrong time. There was a huge play late in the first half where they gave up a 26-yard completion on a third down to Jerick McKinnon, where the Giants did the same thing they did against the Bears when the Bears threw that touchdown to Mooney with just a 3-man rush. When the Giants are dropping 8 in zone, it's not working the way other teams are when they're dropping 8 in zone. Some teams can afford to do that. They have good communication on the back end. People are dropping into the right spots of the zone. The Giants are not ready there. Like you said, it's coaching details. And I think you hit it nail on the head here. You watched, if anyone saw the Sunday Night Football broadcast, Packers versus Saints, you saw Chris Collinsworth show how in the second year of that system for Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur, and remember, Matt LaFleur is a Sean McVay disciple, and Shanahan does a very similar thing. They were showing the exact same look on their play-action passes as they were on their runs, and it was exactly to the T. Every lineman was in the same spot. The ball placement from Rodgers on the fake versus the actual handoff was in the same spot. That's all timing. That's all practice. That's all rhythm. There's a reason why the Packers offense has been incredibly more efficient in year two than year one with Matt LaFleur, and that could also happen in due time with Jason Garrett and Daniel Jones, of course. I mean, remember, this is Jones' third system in 3 years. Run game's not working right now. The blocking is just not what I had hoped it would be. And I guess I was hoping for too much, Nick. But what I really want to do before I go anywhere further is circle back to a few things on offense that stood out to me that I think are more overarching 30,000-foot view, and I want to know your thoughts. To me, there's still too many times where the following is happening on this Giants offense. One, Daniel Jones is not either not seeing or not audibling or doesn't have the liberty to change the play, but there are free rushers coming, and it's blowing up plays and it's blowing up drives, so I want to get your take on that. But I also want to get your take on what I still see happening too much, which is the Giants running at boxes that are heavier than what they have to block. The first play of the game, this is an example of this. The Giants are going against an eight-man box here, and they don't have eight men to block this play. And of course, the play gets completely blown up. I don't blame that on the blocking. I blame that on either the coaching or Jones not having the liberty here to audible out of this play. I mean, they do. Thinking back to the play, I believe it was Board or Tate who was on the inside trying to block this play up. But I'm not considering him a blocker, and even so, that's only 7 against 8. But if one of your 7 is a wide receiver, I mean, it's just hard to blame these offensive linemen when they're going against an uneven box. You should really never be running into this. If you ask Peyton Manning, if you ask Eli Manning, there's no time at all in their career where they're looking to run at a box that has more men in it to defend the run than more men blocking. So my question for you is, why are we still seeing these issues? Is it more so just lack of trust with Jones, or is it more so just not having that continuity yet in Garrett's system?
I think it is more so about the continuity issue, but with that specific play as well, they have an opening script. This is kind of what they wanted to do, and the 49ers also left that A-gap wide open for the run, which is where it was supposed to be. It was a split zone where Caden Smith was coming across, and then they had a backside receiver coming around to fake like a end around or something along those lines, and Tate was tasked to block a defensive back, but the 49ers just crashed it so well. And then Will Hernandez, talking about continuity issues, and Andrew Thomas, they do not block the three technique to the backside of the run, and he just splits the double team. And I want to say that's more on Andrew Thomas. He needs to get hip to hip with that three technique. Will Hernandez is supposed to kind of initially hit him. Andrew Thomas is supposed to get in position, take over the block, and Will Hernandez is supposed to climb out to the linebacker. That doesn't happen, and then the two defenders end up splitting on the tackle for on Wayne Gallman. But that three technique needs to get eliminated there. Nick Gates climbs the linebacker. Golden Tate has to take care of the DB, does not, and then there's just a tackle for no gain.
But so you're saying even with against a box that's heavier in personnel than what you're throwing at it as blockers, you can still make this play work?
Some of these guys aren't in the box until right before the play, and the play clock's already down. There's no chance to audible, and I never really see Daniel Jones audible that much anyways. So the opening script to Garrett, more than likely going to be a run. He's at home. He's against the 49ers. The 49ers seem to anticipate that, and I'm sure they did their film study, studied Garrett's film, and knew that look and thought, hey, they have Caden Smith as the H-back on this play. They're more than likely going to run the football to kind of start their opening drive, so let's crash it hard, and they kind of do. But even if so, I mean, I'm not condoning running into a heavy box. That's not something you should do. I don't know if Daniel Jones has the liberties to audible. I really hope that he does, but I still want to see the execution from those guys up front to make that block. Ideally, I do not want to see that play run, but it seems like with the context of that play going on, there was no time to check out of it.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, listen, what we're seeing from Jones right now might not be what we're going to see from Jones further into his career with regards to the liberty he has at the line of scrimmage, but at some point, you know, you just want to see the Giants get out of these negative plays, and this wasn't the only one. There were a few in the passing game that stood out more to me where there was free rusher that came in and totally disrupted the play and just went unaccounted for. And that, you know, might be an issue with the communication with the linemen from Jones, or just like you said, Jones isn't seeing it or doesn't have the liberty. But I do believe when it comes to the pass protection issue, as far as not, you know, it's very different than like audibling from run to pass. It's more on just Jones, really. I mean, like, you saw it in the games that Eli Manning was in last year. The offensive line protected better for Manning than they did for Jones last year. There's no doubt about it, because Manning is doing a much better job than Jones, and that's fine. He's 14 years, you know, 16 years into his career, whatever it was, calling out protections, telling the linemen where they're going to be, and accounting for free blitzers by reading the defense. But that's something that Jones is going to have to get better at, because the Giants aren't a team that can really afford, in my opinion, to have these misses, especially with the defense the way it is right now. And I don't see that getting any better. I really don't, with the talent that's on this roster at defense right now, at least not this year. I mean, they're going to have better games, there's no doubt about it. They're going to get better when they play better together. But this is not going to be some miracle where the defense all becomes a great defense this year, in my opinion, with the personnel. So I do believe that what I'm looking for, Nick, is better execution, better timing, you know, less mistakes on offense, because they're closer. They're closer than people realize on offense. That's my takeaway from watching this team now on film for 3 weeks. They're so much closer than the stat show, than the point show, than people think from watching the games, because they have no time on the field. People don't account for how little they're on the field and how few possessions they've really had, but they're so much closer. They're this close on so many plays. Even at the 3:10 mark in the third quarter, where the Giants were still well in this ball game, they hadn't had many opportunities on offense, but they could have made the most of it. There was a ball, and there was a play right here that Garrett designed up to beat what the 49ers had been showing on defense, and it was a high-low route, and he had the shot with Slayton in the slot vert, and he was breaking toward the sideline, slot vert out, and it looks for a second like Jones's eyes are pointed there, his hips are definitely pointed there, and this play, at worst, is going to be a 20-yard gain. At best, he catches it around the sideline, because there's no one, the Giants beat the Niners on this play call. There's no one near him on the sideline. He could potentially turn it up for seven. It's potential, depends on the ball placement, obviously. With like perfect ball placement, I think this can be six. With just good ball placement or average ball placement, he's so Slayton's so open, this can be a 20-yard gain to jumpstart the drive. But what happens? Fleming gives up an immediate pressure. Jones doesn't have time. By the time he hits his back foot, the pressure is already there. Boom, he's sacked. Now, do I think Jones maybe could have stepped up? There's a little bit of puck in front of him, but it's not. When you watch this play, the minute he hits his back foot, the pressure's there. So I don't blame that on Jones, really. But this is just an example of, you know, these plays, there was two with Thomas that stood out, and there was one with Fleming where the pressures stop the plays from happening. And it's the little things like that where if those three big plays hit, it really is a different ball game.
It is. It is. And on that one specific play, it seemed like the 49ers were in quarter, quarter, half, so we'll cover six. And the play design is a 3x2, and the design is to the two wide receiver side of the field, which is the boundary. So that's where the half side safety is going to be playing in a cover six defense. And that's exactly what happens. So essentially, the flat route and then the seven route, high low, number 27, the boundary corner. And that's going to stress that safety to cover so much ground, to cover the deep route, because 27 has to respect the flat as well. And it was a good play design by Jason Garrett. But again, literally, Daniel Jones had no time whatsoever. Cameron Fleming was beat up the arc, and he allowed the pass rusher to corner, I want to say it was Kerry Hyder, on top of him, get to Jones, and then get the sack as well. But even on that drive, the Jason Verrett, the next play, ends up getting a defensive holding, and that gives the Giants a first down. But then, of course, because the Giants can't do a lot on offense, they end up on the 3rd and 10 on that same exact drive, and that was where Jones threw a beautiful pass to C.J. Board, and I could have sworn that it was a first down. But it was, you know, 6 inches short, and they go with the QB sneak, and the QB sneak just did not get it. And
well, let's just say this. That was, they didn't even, if you look at the replay of the All-22, they spotted it a full yard short.
Yeah,
this is one of the worst spots I've seen. I mean, I have never seen this not spotted, like, with forward progress. The minute the ball hits his hands is where the NFL almost always spots this, but they don't, and they spot it, weirdly, a full yard back. Not like, at worst, you can give this 6 inches. You can say he didn't have possession until about, I would say maybe 6 inches, like you said at first, in front of the six, fine. If you want to make that ruling, fine, I guess, even though we never see it because we always see where the first ball is touched, and the ball is first touched into his hands 2 yards past the marker. But whatever. They end up spotting it a full yard back. Then the Giants take a full clock to get to their new personnel in for this play, which I don't like. I wish the Giants would have just rushed it. If they want to do that sneak play on 4th and 1, I'm totally foregoing for it on 4th and 1 in this game situation where you need offense, even though it's your own 30-yard line. I'm for it. I'm fine. Good call, Judge. I support that call. We were talking about him not being aggressive. Now he's being aggressive. But don't sub in the heavy personnel. Don't put every single person at the line of scrimmage besides one receiver who's in motion before the snap and then do the sneak. That gives the defense time to regroup. It gives the defense time to bring in their heavy personnel. And of course they stopped the sneak because there was no threat of anything else. If they had rushed the line with the same personnel grouping they had on the 3rd and 10 play where he hit Board, then they could have gotten that first, I think. I think they would have rushed there. I think the sneak would have worked. I don't think the 49ers would have got the right personnel in to stop that play, and I think the drive continues and it changes the whole game.
I mean, it's hard to deny that. I think that also probably would have materialized, but I also want to acknowledge that throw by Daniel Jones. It's from the far hash, and Jason Verrett was all over CJ Board. That ball had to be placed high and outside, and it was. That was a really good throw by Daniel Jones to CJ Board, and if they convert there, who knows, they could have mounted a drive, they could have ended up scoring a touchdown, and then the score is going to look a lot better at 23-16. That's a one-score game right there.
Could
have totally flipped the script, could've. But I would have not have had any confidence in that defense to slow down a Nick Mullins-led offense.
Yeah, and Nick Mullins led offense, sure. Give the credit to where it's due. Kyle Shanahan just totally is just... And it's not just Shanahan. It's every single person buying in. Like you said, the timing, the little intricacies there are just there on that offense. It's just awesome to watch. I mean, that's such a well-coached offense that they could sub out Jimmy Garoppolo and put in Mullins, who had 1 week to practice with the ones, and yet it still looks like that 49ers click, 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 click on offense.
But before we continue, let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. You've counted on restaurants. Now they're counting on you. And while their dining rooms may be closed, they're still open for delivery with DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings you the food you're craving, right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. Choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery too. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local spot, and your food is on its way. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off, zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code BLUEWIRE, all one word. That's $5 off your order and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code BLUEWIRE, all one word. Don't forget, that's BLUEWIRE, all one word, for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch. I don't know about you guys, but I love to pour me some Pepsi and some ice cubes into a glass when I'm watching the New York Football Giants take on somebody. And hopefully the Pepsi can be a good luck charm if I do it in the future and the Giants can get a win. That would be lovely. But Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through any game day, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for people like you and me, the ones who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. It's nuts, too, because we're sitting here and we're saying some positive things about the Giants' offense. Probably not a lot of people expected that, but it's night and day watching the 49ers' offense and watching the Giants' offense.
And like, that, to me, is less talent-based. That, like, on the defense, for me, I think this defensive system can work with different talent. I really do believe that. I, in general, kind of feel like defense is a little bit less coaching than offense. Has always been a take of mine. I think most defensive coordinators run very similar concepts, and there's some people do it differently. There's different fronts. Some people mix up their coverages, but there's a lot of the same, I feel like, on defense, and there's not that much different. I mean, for example, that KC Baltimore game, what Andy Reid came out with against the Ravens, that was you don't see that on defensive side of the ball, I don't think, often, where you just have this totally... Reed had 15 plays designed that night against the Ravens that were just mind-bogglingly awesome. Like, you hadn't seen it from the Chiefs. You maybe saw it last year in a couple games, maybe, but, like, specific plan to attack that defense. But on the flip side, for the offense, I do think the coaching comes in even more so, and I think it's timing, too. It's they need reps. They need practice. But I want to go back to something you said about that Daniel Jones throw to CJ Board. Why am I optimistic? Why are you optimistic, Nick? And we discussed this before in the show. That's how we know we both are. We've compared notes. That wasn't his only really big-time throw in this game. He had the back shoulder ball to Slayton on the offsides that I think was arguably one of the best throws I've ever seen him make. He had another far hash throw. Remember we just talked about the whole shot he missed to Slayton? Didn't miss. The pressure was there on Fleming. Later in the game, he comes back on a 3rd and 19 from the Giants 26, and he hits that same shot to Ratley, who shouldn't even be on this roster, but is, just like CJ Board, guys that they need to upgrade, but that's another time, another story for another day. But Ratley's on the field, and he hits that whole shot to Ratley for, I believe, a 26-yard gain on a 3rd and 19 play. I mean, this is exactly him adjusting, but the ball placement here is excellent. He has to have excellent arm talent to throw to the outside the hashes. He made 3 or 4 throws in this game outside the hashes that were excellent, and that's what you want to see from the quarterback. Can he make all the throws? Yes, Daniel Jones can make all the throws. Where Daniel Jones is going to stand out, if he's going to get better, how he's going to get better, he's going to need the protection, in my mind. I really do believe that. He's a quarterback who has the arm talent, in my opinion, to make all these throws. He just has to get better at the processing, and the only way to get better at the processing is he has more comfortable feel in the pocket, and the only way to get a more comfortable feel in the pocket is trust in his line, and right now, he, in my opinion, has no reason to trust his pass protection. He just doesn't.
That was also a cover six play to the boundary side, actually, it was, and it was him looking off that half safety, that deep half safety in the quarter-quarter half. He looks directly at him, doesn't acknowledge Ratley's route, and then quickly knows exactly what Ratley's doing, obviously, and then he comes off of it and hits Ratley deep downfield on that 3rd and 19. So there were times in this game where he used his eyes to manipulate the safeties, to hold them in place and to hold defenders in place, which is something that you want to see, and it's something that I've actually thought Daniel Jones needs to definitely get better at doing, because he has telegraph throws. In this game, he did it against Chicago. A lot of it happens in the quick game, and that's kind of the nature of the quick game. But on these, you know, deeper drops where it's deeper progressing routes, he's done a solid job actually looking safeties off and giving his receivers a better chance against zone coverage to separate from the zone coverage itself, especially because these receivers, let's be honest, I mean, they're not the best with their separation quickness, and that's usually a trait that you assign to man coverage, but it also could work, obviously, in zone coverage.
Yeah, I mean, we talk a lot about Daniel Jones' lack of protection, but and the lack of running game's obvious, but you have to account for the lack of separation. Last year, NFL Next Gen Stats had the Giants last in the league in separation at wide receiver position. I haven't checked those numbers this year. I will be checking them soon. But something tells me they're not, at least the film tells us, they're not getting separation much there either. Unfortunately, that's another position they're going to have to upgrade in this game. But I do want to touch on, you know, another good play, and that's the 4th and 2 with Jones. Drifting, showing excellent poise in the pocket, good footwork. And this play reminded me of his first game ever against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where he hit Sterling Shepard on that third, I believe it was a 3rd and long, or it was a 3rd and 8. And the same kind of thing. The pressure was there. He's drifting with his footwork in the pocket, but a good drift. He's moving, he's shuffling his feet, he's keeping his feet alive, and then he's readjusting his platform and then patiently making this throw as Ingram gets into space for this first down on a 4th and 2. This was an excellent play by Jones, in my mind.
Wasn't even just an excellent play. It was also great because the 49ers show man coverage in this play, right? And they bring 6 men on their pressure package. So usually young quarterbacks will just try to look to get rid of the ball really quick. But on this play, and give credit to Robert Saleh, he drops Fred Warner off the line of scrimmage into a middle hook zone to rob the mesh concept. At least that's what it looked like, and the Giants run the mesh concept where CJ Board kind of picks and rubs the defender off Evan Ingram in man coverage. But Fred Warner's there to totally bait Daniel Jones into throwing this ball. Daniel Jones sees that, waits, flows away from the pressure, is patient, allows Evan Ingram to clear Fred Warner's zone, and then hits Evan Ingram in between the two zone and before the safety can come down and really just nail Evan Ingram. That was a really good play by Daniel Jones.
Yep. Again, I watched this game, and I know there were some Giants beat guys who were saying he looked shaky, this was one of the worst games he played. I just didn't get that feeling from watching the tape. The tape, to me, did not show that. I had issues with a lot of players. Andrew Thomas, who actually had a decent block on this play, just because we're rewatching it now as we're telling you about it. But I had my problems with a lot of the offense here. The receivers didn't do a good job of creating separation. And Jones, to me, the bigger issue for me here with Jones in this game was just the plays where he didn't account for the unblocked players. I mean, there was a key missed opportunity. I think it was on this drive or later in the game, 3rd and 9 from the San Fran 28. From the San Fran 29 with 8:16 remaining. And Tate breaks open here out into space, but the play is just completely dead because there's an unaccounted blocker. An unaccounted blitzer from San Fran that Jones just simply doesn't call out before the play or whatnot. But you know, if Jones gets this ball out quicker, or it's tough to. I'm not going to blame Jones for not getting this ball quicker. Now that we're rewatching the play, and I have this in my notes as well, he doesn't have time. But the time Tate makes his break, the pressure's already there by this unaccounted blitzer. But if Jones shuffles the protection or finds a way to pick up for this blitzer, moves Deion Lewis to from the left side to the right side so he can pick up this guy, something. I don't know what it would be, but this is a first down, and it changes the whole really complex of the game because the Giants ended up kicking a field goal there, but that could have been a key moment where they get into the red zone and potentially score a touchdown.
That's another 6-man pressure, and it was really difficult. It was a really unique pressure. Yeah. There was a stunt to the slide side, and even though the offensive line slid one way, the blitzer still squeaked through, and Will Hernandez and Nick Gates ended up blocking one guy and it's honestly, it's hard to sit there and just criticize them for it. Typically, you need your offensive line to call out that pressure, and I'm not even sure if Daniel Jones is given, you know, the full responsibility to set that protection, or if it does lie with Nick Gates and some of the offensive line to pick up these blitzers coming through the line of scrimmage. I mean, Deion Lewis did his job and picked up another blitzer, so it's not like he could have been in to pick up that guy as well.
Yeah, no, you're right.
So it's a little difficult, but you're right, man. Daniel Jones does a good job evading the pressure and getting out of the pocket, but by that point, play is dead.
Yep.
So it's you got to kind of tip your cap to a team that it's just seemed much more prepared, much better at executing their assignments. And that's the 49ers, and that's why they represented the NFC in the Super Bowl. And another part of Daniel Jones, just before we leave Daniel Jones, that we haven't even mentioned, and I love the fact that Garrett's doing this, and I know it kind of puts him in harm's way, is using his athletic ability and using him on these zone reads and using him on these power runs to the outside, because you have to force defenses to respect Daniel Jones's athletic ability. Yep. When you do not have a rushing attack, man, you can't run the damn football. Force these defenses to respect Daniel Jones, and that will allow coverages to be just a little bit more lax on the back end, and will also give these receivers a bit more space to run their routes and possibly get open.
Excellent point. And you have a quarterback like Daniel Jones. I'm not saying he's Josh Allen, but you know what? He's big, he's fast, he's athletic. On one of the runs, the one that got called back, or I think it was like a double penalty where it was offsetting, he was awesome in space on that run. I had a really good time watching that run because it was the cut he made to the outside that really looked super athletic. And then a defender tries to take him down, and he gives him the stiff arm at the end, stays on his feet, stays upright. This was like a really nice jump cut by Jones to get to the outside there. And again, he's not Josh Allen, but he's big. He's athletic. He's agile. Remember, his three cone was off the charts for quarterbacks. And he's pretty good straight line speed as well. Use him as a weapon. You know, if you have this kind of quarterback, don't be afraid to run these plays with him. You don't have to, you know, injuries are part of the game, but you know what? It doesn't matter. This is part of what they need to have in their arsenal if you have a Daniel Jones at prospect. Again, this is not Patrick Mahomes. We know that much. So you got to use everything he has, I feel like. Do you agree with that?
100%. And on those plays, they were zone read type plays. Yes. Where the defense believed that Devonta Freeman or whoever was on the field was taking the ball to the left side, and then Daniel Jones would just keep it. The end man on the line of scrimmage would crash to try to take out the running back, and Daniel Jones would be out in space with Caden Smith, yes, who was usually an H-back on the strong side of the play, kind of looping around as a lead blocker. And then Darius Slayton or another receiver would be out in front of him blocking the cornerback, and then they would usually try to take the play side tackle, at least for Daniel Jones on the run, out into space as well. So it was just a really good way to kind of design an advantageous rushing attack for the Giants.
Yeah.
And I really hope Jason Garrett kind of implements this a little bit more into the offense, kind of uses RPOs and gives, yes, this team an ability to actually sustain drives and move the football, because it's not something that the Giants have been able to do consistently whatsoever this season.
No. And listen, Daniel Jones took what? I think it was 90. It was high 90% of his snaps at Duke in the shotgun. They did a lot of RPO there. They did zone read. When I watch this Giants team on film, when I look at that 16-game sample size we have of Jones, good things tend to happen when he's in the gun, and I hope the Giants continue to work in the zone read game like you talk about. I hope they start to work in the RPOs that he was really hyper-efficient with last year. He was hyper-efficient in this area last year. Shermer knew it. Shermer worked it in, and it goes along the lines of what Garrett wants to do in the quick game, knowing how bad his pass protection is. So we'll see if that evolves, but that's something that we hope to see. I want to highlight one play and then get your overall concern level on a specific player. So I'll start with the play, and this was not the only play that concerned me, but this was after the 2nd and 8 rip by Daniel Jones. Just an absolute perfect ball. Again, one of the best throws I've seen him make, the 23-yard back shoulder completion to Slayton. They had another chance for a really big play after this. It was 1st and 10 on the San Francisco 30, 8:19. Now we're going all the way back right now into earlier in the game. So second quarter, 8:19 for those of you following along at the San Francisco 30, after Jones had just hit that 23-yard back shoulder on the offsides of Slayton. This is a chance for them to keep the momentum going. This is the key to the Giants' offense and the key to why I think they kind of struggled to win this game and stay competitive in this game, because every time they took that step forward, they had to take a step backwards. And on this play, it's another good play call by Garrett, especially after that. He designs another shot here, a big max protection play where he takes a deep from under center, play action pass where Slayton's running a deep comeback, and Slayton gets separation. He gets the separation necessary for Jones to hit this throw. Everything's blocked up well to the point where Wayne Gallman's executing his play. Gates' guy is getting a little pressure, but not much, not nearly enough. Jones could clearly have the pocket he needs. There's just one person who messes this play up completely with a really bad pass block, and that's Andrew Thomas, and it totally ruins the play. Jones doesn't even have a chance to hit his back foot. Remember, it's a deep play-action drop, and it requires just, and they're using basically a max protection here. They have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 guys, if you're counting Gallman, in protection here against 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 49ers pass rushers. Really, when you're going 8 in protection against 7 pass rushers, you should really be able to win this route. And we saw this against the Bears earlier when they came out of halftime and hit that kind of deep into Slayton off a deep play-action drop like this. The Giants have had a lot of success from under center on these deep play-action drops, and this one would have been another. Slayton has the separation here, and Jones is going to hit him. Jones' ball placement doesn't miss in these spots. But Thomas had a really bad allowed pressure here, and he just looks really completely out of position. His footwork's bad there. I want to know your concern level overall with Thomas. This is obviously isn't the only play. He had the overset earlier where he got beat on the inside move. Where are you at right now from a concern level standpoint with Thomas? And then you could also break down your, you know, interpretation of this play if you would like.
There were consistency concerns with Thomas coming out. I don't think he's a total liability. He's not Eric Flowers. He's not, oh, this is the end of the world. But I think Dave Gettleman drafted him because he was a safer option in terms of Mekhi Becton. You know, he never really took a lot of pass sets at Louisville. How is he going to be? Tristan Wirfs, he's athletic, but he had a lot of technical issues. I thought Thomas, you know, he's long. He could play both sides. I don't think he's going to be this all-time Pro Bowl kind of player, but I think he's going to be a solid player, and he's taking his lumps right now, and that's going to happen with rookies. He needs to get better with his technique. He needs to do a better job lowering his center of gravity, using his hands a lot better, because his hand placement is incredibly sloppy. On that one play that you were just referring to, his hands are really low. He allows Eric Armstead to get inside of his chest and then basically hump move him off him, and Thomas doesn't really sink his hips. He doesn't really do anything to kind of keep himself anchored and in front of Eric Armstead. He allows Eric Armstead to attack the half man inside and then use his outside arm to just club Andrew Thomas back inside and then just work himself, Eric Armstead, that is, back outside to Thomas's outside shoulder. Thomas never has his equilibrium about him. He's just very kind of sloppy with his technique, his ability to frame blocks on this specific rep. He's not like that all the time. There's plenty of good reps as well, but there are also plenty of bad reps. There's this also this one in the fourth quarter, second and 10, 2:57 left, and Andrew Thomas has to vertical set against a wide rusher. The rusher's wide, so he vertical sets. That means it's not a jump set. It's not a 90-degree set. It's going to be basically he's going to take his outside foot, and he's just going to step backwards. And it's in order to cut off these wide-angled rushers. It's in order to get to the top of the arc to prevent a pass rusher from kind of being able to beat you to that spot. Now, he gets there, but his hands are incredibly wide, and he always allows, it seems like, at least in these situations, the defender to make initial contact. And when the defender makes initial contact with his inside arm on the inside shoulder pad of Andrew Thomas, Andrew Thomas lunges at the hips. And that's not something you want to do because it kind of brings your momentum forward. And as he lunges at the hips, he tries to use, Andrew Thomas that is, his outside arm to make contact on number 96. But number 96 uses a violent swap to just chop Andrew Thomas's outside arm downward violently, and that brings the rest of your momentum, since you're already leaning, forward, and it totally kind of disallows you from executing your block, and that's exactly what happens. So 96 wins the half man, he dips and he rips right around the corner of the corner as in the pass rushing arc, and he starts to corner, gets his hips flipped, pointed right towards Daniel Jones, and then he just gets the sack on Daniel Jones from the backside. Andrew Thomas needs to be more balanced in these situations. He needs to be quicker with his hands. He needs to be better with his framing of the blocks. He needs to not allow the defense to dictate the rep and not allow the defense to get to the half man and then use a violent chop-rip combination. It needs to be much more, he needs to be much better, I guess, with his reactionary quickness, his technique, and his balance overall in these situations.
Yeah, and I mean, I wish we could tell you these are the only reps like this, but there's the rep, the first possession of the Giants' first possession of the third quarter, where he just oversets completely and gets beat on the inside move. This inside move has been killing. We haven't even talked about it on either of these two plays, but the inside move is killing him, and this play was totally derailed by that quick pressure. Jones tries to get rid of the Jones evades it on this play. Does a really good job because Thomas is beat almost immediately, and the entire timing of the play is thrown off.
On that play, it's a little bit difficult for Andrew Thomas because credit to the 49ers and Robert Saleh, which I feel like we're doing a lot of that. They line up a defensive end wide of Andrew Thomas, so he has to jump set this player on this specific play. He doesn't vertical set on this one, but he does jump set him because he can't vertical set because he's not going to have any inside help because Will Hernandez and Nick Gates are going to have to double team that 2-eye tech that's kind of occupying Will Hernandez. So he jump sets him, but in doing so, he still gives up a huge inside rushing angle, and he just doesn't have the foot quickness, or he just didn't do it on this specific play to kind of adapt to the inside move. Once the pass rusher kind of jolts inside, Andrew Thomas' feet get kind of narrow, and then he just tries to wash the pass rusher down back into Will Hernandez, who's pretty far away from him on that specific play, but he can't. The pass rusher ends up winning the rep and getting Daniel Jones to step up and throws the whole timing off and, again, incompletion of Darius Slayton.
All right, next, so then tell me, level of concern right now, 1 to 10 scale, where are you at with Thomas?
Level of concern, I think he's had a murderous row of pass rushers to kind of go up against. I'm going to say like a 3.
Okay.
I'm not overly concerned. I think that other rookie tackles, like specifically Mekhi Becton and Jedrick Wills, have shown a lot more so far than Andrew Thomas. But Andrew Thomas has also shown a lot of good reps in pass protection. He's also shown a lot of good reps in the run game, too. It hasn't been all bad. I don't want to make this a podcast about it being all bad, but there are concerns that we talked about back in April about Andrew Thomas, and they've kind of been exposed by some of these more talented veteran type of pass rushers.
Yeah, for me, I'll probably say 5. Still not that concerned. 5 is not very high, but I was never huge on the kid to begin with. Always my OT4. And just my only reason I'm at 5 and not 3 with you is because of how well those other 3 have played so far and how well they've adjusted. And because I don't really consider the 49ers too much of a murderer's row yet to deal with. I agree the first 2 matchups weren't great. My other issue is the other reason's at 5 is because in my evaluation, I'm curious where you stand on this, not overall, because I think overall you'd probably have to move in guys like Gates, but just from a pass protection only standpoint, I actually think that he's been the worst of all the 5 Giants in my mind from what I've seen. He's had the most blown, he's the most, at least from the standpoint of the most plays have been blown up because of his missed blocks over a collective 3 games. I know he was pretty good in the first game. I didn't see it a lot there, but the past 2 games, it's been more apparent. And I think, I believe in both games, it was more than from what I charted of all 4 of those guys, Fleming, Zeitler, who, by the way, has been playing much better. I love what I've been seeing from Zeitler lately after a really shaky first start, Hernandez and Gates. So I don't know where you're at there.
I would probably say that's a fair assessment. He also probably has, I mean, I think all the jobs are hard, but he probably also has the toughest job, and the Giants seem to trust him out on the island, which is something that you want to see. You want to see that kind of trust. And on a lot of these plays, they are only 5-man protection where the tight ends don't go out. And we've seen Jason Garrett be hesitant to do that, especially against the Bears. He wanted to keep 6 men, even 7 men in for protection, which is something that you kind of have to do with Cam Fleming and a young Andrew Thomas sometimes when these pass rushers can pin their ears back and go. But that entire left side of that offensive line, I've had issues with, from Gates to Thomas, with Will Hernandez too. Will Hernandez, I was talking to somebody on Twitter about Will Hernandez, and after watching the All-22, I didn't come away too enthusiastic about his play. I did not. And I actually, on a Big Blue View, I put together a piece, an article about, you took the Giants and the Jets roster currently constructed, and you combined them. What would the team look like? So I assembled 60 guys from that team. I didn't have Will Hernandez as a starter.
Wow.
I put Alex Lewis over him. Because a little bit of offensive tape I've seen from the Jets, Alex Lewis seems like he's doing a little bit better than Will Hernandez. And I also had Mekhi Becton as a starting left tackle over Andrew Thomas. I had Andrew Thomas on the right side. But it all ended well, guys, because we had more Giants in the team than the Jets.
You got to hope at this point. But that doesn't, neither of those 2 things surprise me. I mean, we spoke the other night about Hernandez. I don't know. I need more out of him right now in year 3. And then as far as Thomas versus Becton, I was higher on Becton to begin with. The only issue with Becton was going to be he was going to either be a fall flat right on his face kind of guy right away, like, oh, crap, this guy doesn't have what it takes. And, like, he was just a total project. But like the fact that he's transitioned so well so quickly, Becton, it is like it's, I think it's skyrockets now. I think it's takeoff time for him, and he's going to be like quickly evolve into one of the better tackles in the NFL. I could be wrong on that, but again, with Becton, for me, it's more of a just. He might be too athletic, too big, too long to beat. But again, we're not ruling out We're not ruling out Thomas yet. I just got the two mixed up for a second in my brain. I just want to see more. And again, my concern level is only a 5. That's it. But it's time, Nick. We've spent a lot of time on the offense, rightfully so, because if this team's going to get better this year, starting this week, hopefully, because they're still only, what, one game back in the NFC East? There's still somehow a chance that they are this disgusting 7-9 winner. Do not rule it out. It's still possible. But if they're going to get better, it's going to be in the offensive side of the ball, in my opinion, because I want to flip it to the defense, which we haven't spent much time on this podcast. Here's my overall takeaways of the defense. This defense is obviously not up to speed with what Graham wants to do yet. That's fine. It's week 3. I get it. It's a new system. But for me, they're just so overmatched talent-wise. You got guys like and it was more apparent ever now when without Jabril Peppers on the field. I know a lot of people don't think Peppers is that good. A lot of critics. My dad, Ron Schneier, shout out. He is the biggest Jabril Peppers critic. He's still talking about that misfill that he had in week 1 where he didn't fill the run lane, and it led to that huge run play by Snell, or either Connor or Snell, pretty sure it was Snell. But listen, when he's out of the game, you notice the difference. And when you got guys like Ebner running around and Devontae Downs then has to play more, which is an absolute disaster. I mean, the talent isn't there, I don't think, Nick, but I saw so many bad things. I saw missed tackles. I saw guys running into the same exact zone. I saw them trying that 3-man pressure again that just doesn't work, because the Giants, when they drop 8, it's unfortunately not like when other teams drop 8. There's miscommunications. Guys are somehow leaving zones open with 8 in coverage. I just don't know where to go on this defense. I don't know if I see a path toward improvement. That's the scary part. And you still, despite all this, there were still some sick reps by Leonard Williams, who I thought had a good game, Dalvin Tomlinson, who I thought had a good game, and it's just like, it almost doesn't matter. And Blake Martinez had a couple really good plays in there, and it's like these guys, and same with Bradbury, of course, but like, does it matter when the rest of the guys are as bad as they are? I don't know where to go from here. Do you see... Talk about the defense with me, Nick. Where do you see – how can they get better there?
Also, Lorenzo Carter and Julian Love had a couple nice plays as well. But I see there's a couple chinks in the armor, man. And when you have issues, when you have liabilities on your defense, they can be exploited. It's the same thing we've been saying for the last couple weeks. When you put Nate Ebner out there, when you put Devontae Downs out there, when you put Isaac Yiadom out there, they're going to be targeted. And the continuity of the defense is not going to hold up. And we saw adjustments in this game. The first two plays by the 49ers were outside runs. And the Giants were doing their bare front kind of thing. Like we've talked about, I'll just call it tight because the one, it's not really typically a bare front. It's more of a bare eagle kind of mix. But they were able to adjust. And they would run 4-3. They were doing their 3-3-5. They came out in 4-3. They would put O'Shane Ximenez down with his hand in the dirt and kind of favor him with it would be like a 5 technique and a 3 technique, or like a 4 technique and a 3 technique. They would kind of vary it to the strength of the 49ers to kind of protect from strong side runs. But it just didn't really matter all that much. The defense itself, from pre-snap to post-snap, there was always like a hesitation on where the hell is the ball going. We don't know who has the football. Is it Jerick McKinnon? Is it Brandon Ayuk on an end around? Is it Jeff frickin' Wilson when he's in the game? And those are going to be issues. And again, with this specific offense, this offense is full of a bunch of backups right now. I've never seen backups execute their assignments so damn high like they did in this game.
It's crazy. It's like these backups have been practicing with the first team all year, and they haven't been. And it scares me, Nick, because I know McVay runs a similar type of offense where they're going to be on point. The timing is going to be great. They're going to show one thing in the run game, and then they're going to show the exact same thing, but it's going to be a play action. I am so nervous about the Giants' defense against the Rams. I'm hoping the offense can kind of carry the load there. We'll have to see what happens there in that matchup. But yeah, I wish I saw a path. I mean, they're doing some really positive things on first downs, especially in the run game, and it looks great. And then you have to see them, you watch them give up these 2nd and 13s, these 2nd and 16s week after week after week, and it's really tough. It's tough to watch, and it just feels like the guys aren't dropping into the right spots. The missed tackles this week, I mean, there was only one egregious one, the Fackrell play, but it was a big one, and there just seems to be a lot of miscommunication on the defense, and... I mean, there was a play where who's that backup tight end that they're using out there?
Ross Dwelly.
Dwelly, because Reed got hurt, where he released late from the left side of the formation across, and you saw, it was one of the linebackers, it might have been 51, it might have been Fackrell.
No, it was Devontae Downs.
Devontae Downs. Just turn his head around and completely run backwards, but the pressure was there. Mullins was getting slammed on that play. If he just doesn't do a thing, if literally Devontae Downs stands there like a statue, there's nothing that that Mullins can do, and he's either taking the sack and eating the play or potentially throwing right at Downs, because Downs is literally occupying the space that Pulley, what's his name, not Pulley,
Dwelly
is running into. But Devontae Downs turns his head around and just runs backwards at 100 miles per hour, and he just dumps the ball off to Dwelly, and then he runs another 12 yards on the second, I believe it was second and 12 or second and 13, first down. Whole drive continues. You get them in a third and long there, that changes everything. The 49ers went on to score on that drive. So, you know, it's tough. I don't know what to say about this defense right now.
It's not good. And that was a second and 11, and the Giants were in a cover two. It was a 4-3 kind of front. And the 49ers ran a play action, so the linebackers get sucked up. Blake Martinez realized it's a play action just by reading his run keys, and he starts bailing Downs. It took a little bit. And then what I thought he was doing initially was kind of staying in to see what Kyle Juszczyk was doing, because Kyle Juszczyk stayed in for pass protection. But it seemed like right when Nick Mullins turned his shoulders and still had the football, he just bailed, and he just had no sense of the backside receiver. It's like they don't necessarily have the, especially him, Devontae Downs, have the spatial awareness to really execute zone coverage. And I know he had to bail because his part of the zone, because it was a second and 11, was wide open because he got fooled by that play action. But to have no sense that there's a backside receiver coming on that shallow cross, it's a really bad look. It is mind-boggling.
You're right. Spatial awareness. That's the perfect way to really describe this, and that's the issue with some of these second-level guys and now third-level guys, now that they're forced to put in Nate Ebner. And obviously, you know, we didn't want Yadam in there. He got benched towards the end of the game, which could be a plus, because you said you saw some decent stuff from Ryan Lewis.
I did, but I want to say today, I'm not sure if it was Judd, I think it was Jerome Anderson came out and he said that they're going to roll with Isaac Yiadom as a starter, but don't be surprised if Robert Woods or Cooper Kupp score on a horizontal cross in man coverage and Yiadom's benched and Ryan, I just from a little bit, Ryan Lewis played, I think, 18 snaps. It wasn't all that much, and I don't even really think he was targeted all that much. He had like one nice tackle. And Yiadom, give him his credit where he's due, he's pretty good in run support.
I'll
give him
that. Yeah.
He's pretty physical in run
support. Really nice play in run support.
But in coverage, he's definitely a liability. And I would not be surprised if you see a lot of Ryan Lewis next week and Yiadom ends up riding pine.
And it's interesting, just think about this from a 30,000-foot view with Yiadom, right? The Giants literally, after not having an entire offseason, no rookie minicamp, no OTAs, no mandatory minicamp, no preseason, training camp, they traded for him towards the end of training camp, right before the regular season, and said, okay, hey you, come into our system. You have to learn. You're going to be right on the field in a system you hadn't been practicing in. You don't have any preseason games to try to get any experience in. Good luck. And why should we be surprised that it hasn't really worked out yet with Yiadom and the Giants? But, you know, Nick, I'm hoping for the best here with this defense, and I see some glimmer of light with that D-line and their early down ability to stop the run and Blake Martinez and Bradbury, but they're just still so many pieces away. It really, it stinks that McKinney's not on the field. I think McKinney could have really made a difference on this defense.
I was just thinking about that, and that was going to be my next point. I really do think Xavier McKinney would make a pretty big difference, and sadly, I look at Darnay Holmes in the slot. I saw him have a couple mistakes early on in the game. I'm not sure if it was the 49ers' first drive or their second drive. It was like a third down, and the 49ers motioned to a bunch formation, and he didn't take his receiver. He thought he had Jabril Peppers' guy, and there was no reason in my mind for him to think that, because he had the inside leverage on the inside most receiver, but the receiver releases inside, and he just didn't go with him. And then that's when we saw, I want to say it might have been Ross Dwelly, no, Trent Taylor it was Trent Taylor wide open for an easy catch, and he was just behind. These guys on the back end need to know their assignments. That's some James Betcher's kind of stuff. This defense is supposed to be much more simplified.
Right.
And when you use pre-snap motion, just like the 49ers do, and we know Sean McVay is going to do that a ton, you need to know your assignments when those motions happen, and it seems like these young guys have not really been aware, and Darnay Holmes specifically, he's made mistakes in a couple of these games, little mistakes here and there, give up a little gain there, but those kind of things will lead to big blow-ups, and I don't think Holmes has any sort of mental processing like negatives like DeAndre Baker did. Like DeAndre Baker, you know, falling asleep in meetings, all that. Darnay Holmes is not like that. I just think it was kind of like a lapse, I guess you could say. I don't think that he's a liability in terms of his mental processing whatsoever. I never got that indication, but he just needs to kind of make sure that these players need to make sure that they know their assignments going in to every play, even if the pre-snap motion mixes up where they're going.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, Nick, anything else you want to touch on? Offense, defense, formation, anything that comes to your mind from the film?
I did like I said, that Patrick Graham tried to adjust a little bit, and he also had to, I think. I'm not sure how much the Jabril Peppers injury affected the fact that he had to roll out different kinds of formations and fronts. I mean, we saw 3-4, we saw 4-3, we saw 1-4-6, we saw 2-3-6, we saw 4-2-5, we saw a lot. And one thing's for certain, at least for me, and I'm sure I could probably speak for you too, is we saw way too much Devontae Downs. He played 55 snaps. And I don't want to sit here and just make this a Devontae Downs negative kind of podcast, but there's no reason for you're not going to have success. Have you, like, I haven't really seen many great plays from him. There were a couple where he was getting blocked out of the play, but he was able to kind of hold up just enough to box the running back inside towards his teammates, which is enough for me to be like, okay, you executed your assignment, you had contained, and you didn't allow yourself to get blown off the line of scrimmage. But on some of these plays, too, I wanted to ask you this. Devontae Downs is like an edge rusher. They would have like a 3-3-5 and three linebackers. It would be like Lorenzo Carter to the strength, Devontae Downs on the weak side, and then Blake Martinez in the middle. And I'm just wondering, do the Giants not have another player who could execute that? And I know it's not like he's rushing the passer from right. that alignment, but just even aligning him there, yeah. I feel like gives the offense an advantage.
I'm wondering when they're going to make the leap here and say, let's try out Cam Brown. How could Cam Brown possibly be worse in this spot? How? Tay Crowder. I don't care. Put anyone on the field. They just drafted 72 linebackers and still found the need to cut Ryan Connolly. So, all right, let's give it a shot. I don't know what they're seeing with Downs. I'm not quite sure. To me, he's been just absolutely disastrous. I can't imagine that Patrick Graham is watching this tape and being like, there's a lot to work with here. There's a reason he's on the field for 55 snaps. I just can't understand it. But I think the page needs to be turned, Nick. I think we'll see a process of elimination. Better by, you know, what's the phrase? They'll get addition by subtraction by putting freaking Cam Brown on the field. I want to see it. They're already trotting out Nate Ebner's of the world, and Darnay Holmes is a rookie. They're making him play a million snaps. Let's see it. At this point, they have nothing to lose. I'm just out on Downs.
So am I, and he's only played 80 snaps on the season. He played 55 of them in week 3. So I do think that might be a byproduct of Jabril Peppers getting injured and them having to kind of get creative on the fly. At least that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that they're not going into a game plan being like, you know what, we're going to play Devontae Downs the majority of snaps against the best running team in the NFL.
I hope it makes total sense too, what you just said, Nick, because it's probably like they have to use somebody when something like that happens, an unforeseen injury to a major player on your defense who is playing off basically 100% of the snaps. What you basically have to do is bring in somebody who has a good familiarity with defense. I'm sure Cam Brown and Tate Crowder, they weren't really prepared to step into big roles in this game. Same thing with Ebner. I mean, Ebner played, we talk about Ebner, he's on the field for only 15 snaps, so it wasn't anything crazy there. So I think maybe with a week to game plan, we can see something different. I'll be intrigued if I get to see number 47 or number 48 on the field, and that's Cam Brown and Tate Crowder respectively. I really will be.
I'm not going to lie, though. 47 to 48, that's ugly, ugly linebacker.
Those aren't great linebacker numbers. They should be wearing something in the 50s, but at the same time, anything will be a better sight on my eyes than seeing freaking, 52 out there, Devontae Downs. I'm so done on Downs. And you said you don't want to make this a trash Downs pot. I don't care. Trash Downs, trash him all you want. I'm done with the guy. Don't even understand why he's on the team. I still don't understand why he's on this roster over Ryan Connolly, but get him off the field. Let's move forward.
And as for just defensive players, I know we touched on it a little bit before that I thought executed a lot of their assignments to a high level. Mm-hmm. I think Blake Martinez, there's the one rep going around Twitter of him getting blown up on that backside screen to Jerick McKinnon. It's not a good look, but Blake Martinez had a solid game. I'm not going to sit here and take away a lot to knock on Blake Martinez. I thought Julian Love played relatively well. Leonard Williams, Dexter Lawrence, specifically Dalvin Tomlinson, I felt like played really well. And I'm glad that I see – more Logan Ryan. He played 77 yes. snaps, and I think that is necessary. He had one lapse in coverage, and I'm not sure if it was even his fault. I couldn't really tell by the route run, and I'm not sure on that specific play if they wanted Isaac Yiadom to drop deep with that receiver, but 49ers being 49ers, they kept somebody just standing at the line of scrimmage, and Yiadom had to respect that in zone coverage as well, so he kind of gets high load, but that might have been like a negative mark on Logan Ryan, but he's a player that you watch the film and you say, okay, that's a good football player.
Yeah. And he was great in run support as well. He's a tough player. He's good for them. And definitely kudos to one of the players you mentioned. Leonard Williams' sack was freaking awesome. That, talk about a guy who wasn't really converting into sacks last year, but he did an excellent job of that. And just one more thing that's interesting that I thought you wanted to point out about the personnel.
Yeah, no, Corey Ballantyne played 2 snaps in this game.
Yeah.
He played 2 snaps.
Wow.
So that bodes well for Ryan Lewis, for sure. And another thing about these corners. I know James Bradberry is a cornerback that typically plays on the left side, but he's been following a lot. So I'm interested to see if he follows Robert Woods in this upcoming matchup. That's going to do well for Cooper Kupp in fantasy, though.
Yeah, no doubt about that. All right, Nick, anything else or you want to close this bad boy out?
Nah, I think we're straight, man.
All right, hopefully you guys enjoyed this one. This is the All-22 breakdown of the New York Giants game against San Francisco 49ers. We will be having another Giants game this fun Sunday. Hopefully it's better than the last. It's the Los Angeles Rams. I almost called them the St. Louis Rams. They're still in my head, the St. Louis Rams. Anyway, if you guys do want to support the show, guys and girls, please do us a favor and rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Please leave us a 5-star review. Don't be that jerk who somehow has a problem with us. And if you are that jerk, and I am calling you a jerk, then don't go and rate and review the podcast. Just leave me alone. We're just trying to do this for the fans, for the people, for us, for everyone Bleeding Blue Nation who just wants to see better football. It's coming. I promise. The offense is closer than you think. The All-22 film has told us that, and I will stand by that, and I know Nick will as well. Until then, we'll speak to you later. Have a great rest of your week, and go Giants.
The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team and player and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.